everybody, and welcome back to the High School Life Podcast. If you're new here, my name is Carter Chase.
And my name is Lewis Smith.
And together we bring you a different perspective on life. Today, we are doing that by interviewing one of Lewis's friends.
Samuel. He's born in Singapore. Lived most of his life there until about college. And then he went to college. And then right after college, in Singapore, every boy has, at the age of 18, has to go into the army for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So he went into the army for a couple of years, which he'll talk about that. And he moved to Shanghai, China. It's a city, small city with about 4.9 million people in it.
Is that somewhere
right?
Around there.
I think that's right.
More.
I might have confused numbers up. Pretty sure it's like that.
Well, all of China has like 4.1 billion or 1.4 billion.
I don't know.
I think. I'm not.
A lot of people. Yeah. A lot more than probably in the town you're living in right now.
Unless you're like living in New York City or.
No. Anyhow.
I don't know.
So he's from Singapore, lives in China, Shanghai, China. In this episode, he'll probably refer to this, when he says the programs or program, it's referring to this company that he's affiliated with, and it's called Summerhill, and it's like exploring for kids or something like that, explore the world. And pretty much they take 8 to 14-year-old kids from China in groups of like 30, and they take them around the world to see stuff and try things. So they have a couple in New Zealand where they like fish and stuff, and they have one in England where they go to Harry Potter World. The one that we've interviewed the Chinese kids from that we've on this podcast is the one that they did with my dad, and that was the Land Before Time program, which they dug for dinosaurs. And so in this episode, he'll talk about that program. And that's just pretty much just like a long field trip with a bunch of kids for about 2 weeks. And they just see the world. And yeah.
Yep. So we started off by asking him about how life was like in Singapore. So,
yeah. So here's Samuel.
How life was like growing in Singapore. It was actually pretty simple for me. Singapore is an island, so I was always near the seaside. I could always go down to the beach, do a bit of fishing. Just ducks. What I liked doing was digging for stuff. Which was what brought me all the way to the States to dig for fossils with your dad. So yeah, that was one of my hobbies when I was younger. Also, Singapore, I gotta say, we have a very, very good education system. I'm very thankful for that system because it got me to where I am today. And I have two younger sisters, kind of like you as well. But yeah, I did spend a lot of time pulling pranks on my sisters. growing up in Singapore, I miss it, man. It's simple. It's a very green country. And yeah, it's beautiful. I haven't been home for about, I think, nearly 2 years now. Yeah. Wow.
Can you tell us about what your parents did as a living when you were growing up?
Sure. So my mom was a banker. She worked for Deutsche Bank. My dad had his own business. He was a publisher. And he specialized in printing textbooks for schools, primary and secondary schools in Singapore. But when I was growing up, they were very busy people, and my mom was kind of the head of the house. Yeah.
Wow. Cool. What were your hobbies when you were a young boy? You mentioned finding stuff and fishing. Did you ever play any sports, or what were things you liked to do if you had any friends to do?
With friends. So when I was, it actually changed and evolved as I got older. So when I was in primary school, one of it was going down to the beach to dig, as well as riding bicycles, just with the neighborhood kids. And then when it went to secondary school, it was basketball and softball. Those were the things that I played a lot of. And that was in During my own free time, I was a bit of a nerd. I like reading, love Star Wars, and what was that? Playing computer games.
Oh yeah.
And then when I went to Polytechnique, it was rugby, and I played rugby throughout my university days before I entered the army. So yeah, those were kind of my hobbies growing up. It changed from time to time. And like now, at the age of 30, I'm back to playing with computer games and collecting models as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned university. What did you study in college?
So I majored in biomedical engineering. By right, I was supposed to go work in a hospital. That means based on what I learned, I had to work in a hospital or pharmaceutical companies. But I kind of gave that up. It was a good thing to study. It was gaining traction at that time, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do. Yeah.
So you mentioned you went to the army. What were you assigned to in the army?
So after the basic military training, I was actually assigned to kind of a secret area, actually, but I was a weapons specialist. Basically, I understood many, many different, most of the small arms that my army uses, and I was kind of assigned to distributing as well as safety checks for weaponry systems using my unit. Yeah, I really can't say too much about that. It's a really sensitive topic, yeah.
So why did you move to China?
Well, there were so many reasons, man. Firstly, I love my country, but my country is really, really small. I mean, you could travel from east to west in about 45 minutes.
Oh wow.
So yeah. So that was one of the main things. It's small. Things got kind of mundane. And on top of that, my career, I wanted to pursue a career in outdoor camp education. In my country, it's a huge market, meaning all kids have to actually do it. But it hasn't changed much over the last 10 to 15 years within my own country. Why I came to China, firstly, I saw an opportunity as this industry has just started here in China. So there was a lot of room to grow. And the thing about the Chinese market, this is mainly business, of course, is in China, as long as you want to do something, and you try and you work hard for it, it tends to work out. If that's the good part about having an emerging market here in China, it's just huge. Or I think 1.4 billion people. Yeah, tons of kids. So yeah, one of the main reasons for me to choose to come here would be the business opportunities within the industry. And I like the freedom that I have to design and plan different programs and curriculum, because it's not so fixed yet. It's not like my country where everything they tell you for a 3-day, 2-night program or 5-day, 4-night program, you do a set of certain things, and that does not change, that cannot change, and you cannot deviate from it, and you cannot get creative. But yeah, it's not the case in China. It's been awesome, man. I've done so many things here that I do not think I could do in my own country. Of course, resources are a huge issue as well. Like here in China, I've worked, I've created that dinosaur program with your dad. On top of that, I'm currently working on a space program here in China, and they're actually opening up the resources for us to actually use to educate and teach a whole new generation of kids about space travel, etc. So yeah, if you ask me to sum it up in one word, possibilities in China. That's what I would say. It's just endless, the possibilities and the chances that you actually have in China. Yeah.
Can you explain to us what you do for a living now in China?
Well, it's kind of a long story. When I first got to China, it was just the company I was in, Summerhill. It was just a startup. We had like, plus me, we had 8 people in the company. It was really, really small. And then now we've actually grown into a company that has over 60 full-time staff. And we have about nearly 2,000 part-time staff. So the company has actually grown a lot over the last few years. And my role in the company has kind of switched here and there. Because what I specialize in my company, we call 0 to 1. That means I'm in charge of starting new things within the company, be it programs, departments. I fix issues. I fix problems. For me, a title doesn't mean anything. I'm a shareholder in Summerhill. Basically my job scope changes according to what the company needs and what kind of problems we are facing as we are expanding. Yeah.
So do you all, so with all the traveling that you do with your company, do you enjoy all that, like all the traveling to places around the world?
Well, I have to admit, when I was younger, a couple of years back, I enjoyed it a lot. There are not a lot of jobs out there that allow you to travel to different places and actually do the things you like to do, be it digging for fossils or going to Harry Potter world and stuff like that. It was really fun. As I'm getting older and I have family commitments, traveling gets harder for me. Yeah, like I'm supposed to get married soon, and if I travel too much again, then I'm going to hear a lot from the missus. So I think, yes, in the past, a little bit. In the future, we'll probably cut back a little on it. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on getting married. That's exciting.
I'm happy.
Yeah. How long have you guys known each other?
Let's see. I met her in 2016. We've been together for about, 5 years now? Nearly 5 years now, coming to 5 years. Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. Sweet. But at the time, I wasn't 30. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. That's awesome. So you mentioned a little bit that Singapore is a lot smaller than China, and specifically Shanghai. But how is like everyday life different between Singapore and Shanghai?
Okay, so one of the most obvious things is the Chinese drive on. Okay, okay, you guys drive on the wrong side as well.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be driving on the right side. You guys are left. That's the wrong side. That's the first most obvious thing. Secondly, the food. The thing that really pops out straight in the face is the food. In China, the food is just insane. There's like so many different cultures and so many backgrounds here in China. So you get a really huge influence of food, anything that you can imagine. Shanghai is like a food hub here. You can get nearly every cuisine imaginable, Indian. They call it American food, but I'm not quite sure what American food is. American food to me is like Western food. And then we have the Italians, and then we have Spanish food and stuff. So yeah, food is one of the main things. But what I love most about Shanghai is the convenience. They've got a very, very good transportation system. That infrastructure is just amazing. You can get to anywhere. Shanghai's huge. I heard it's like 10 times the size of Singapore, but I could travel to the other end of Shanghai within an hour and a half. So that just makes it super, super convenient. And one other thing that I think they've done very well is the communities that they're building. Like, most people in Shanghai, they stay in high-rise apartments because land here is just super expensive. And yeah, so what they've done is that they've just made everyday life super convenient. Like, just downstairs, the moment I go down and I take a right, I have everything. I have a Walmart. I have a cinema. I have an arcade. I have a ton of shops to go shopping for. So yeah, I just like how things are very, very convenient here. And oh, the e-bikes. Yeah, that's something that I think it's very unique to China, especially. So everywhere in China, wherever you go, there are this things they call, what's that? 电瓶车. It's a electronic bike that nearly everybody has. It gets you from point A to point B really, really quickly, and it runs on electricity. So yeah, it's environmentally friendly and very, very quick. Yeah, it's one of the things I actually like playing around here. I actually built my own e-bikes here. So yeah, so life here is pretty awesome. Yeah.
So someday, do you want to go back to Singapore, or do you think you'll always be in China?
To be honest, education-wise, I would prefer if my kid had an education back in Singapore. So my plan is to be in China till I'm about 35, 36. And then, yeah, I would probably move back home or when my child comes, whichever comes first. Because in China, the education system is it's a little bit backdated. They are still on a system that I wouldn't use the word judge, but the system here just works in such a way where it is based too much academically. Scores and points, there's just not enough being done for a more holistic or well-rounded education here in China. And I don't want my child or my kid to have that kind of pressure from the get-go. Yeah, I want them to spend more time finding their own interests, learning what they like, finding more about themselves. Yeah, because for me, education isn't just about that piece of paper. It's supposed to encompass a lot more things about life, about how to be a decent person, how you treat others, etc. So yeah, that's probably one of the reasons I would go back to Singapore, my child, and of course, home. No matter where you go, home, you will know where home is. So yeah, I have to go back someday.
What do you like to do for your hobbies now as an adult?
Wow, that's a good question. So there are a lot of things I enjoy doing during my free time. Some I cannot say on the camera. yeah, but that I can say is I do a lot of reading as well as, yeah, previously I said I collect models. I mean, not female models. I collect Iron Man. And Star Wars stuff. So yeah, some of those are really, really difficult. One of the main reasons, so how I got started into this, it's actually because of the kids in my program. Yeah, the kids in my program. I was in all my travels with kids along the way. So one of them actually got me hooked on this. He gave me my very first Iron Man toy. And yeah, I could not stop. That was about a year and a half ago, and I've been collecting it ever since.
Nice. Do you plan on keeping those forever, or do you plan on like handing them down to your kid or selling them? What's your plan with those Iron Man toys?
Okay, so there's two parts to this. For my own hobby and interest wise, I definitely want to hold on to them as much and as long as I can, hopefully get my kids interested in it. But the thing about these toys is they appreciate in value very, very quickly. And what I have there is worth about nearly 300,000 RMB. Yeah, that's so yeah, one day when the price is good and most of them are no longer in production, yeah, I might choose to sell if it's the money's good. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
So can you tell us about your whole collection of all your toys and like which, what are your favorites and all of that stuff like that?
Wow. So my favorite model for all the Iron Man nerds out there is would be the Mark 47 that appeared in Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm not quite sure if you guys have watched that movie, but yeah, that's my favorite Iron Man suit of all time. I've basically collected every single model that that has been produced by any of the toy makers. But yeah, I'm missing quite a couple because they haven't come out yet, and I'm hoping they will come out before my life ends, I hope. Yeah. So these toys, I don't really play with them. I just get them and I put them there. They're just meant to look good. Yeah, they're just meant to look good. I have an obsession with them because so that whole shelf I have that was supposed to mimic Tony Stark's Hall of Armors, where he keeps his suits after he's created them. So yeah, my goal is to be able to collect all models and to actually show it off, and hopefully one day when the value's right, yeah, sell it off.
Nice. So I have a question for you. If you could go back in time and talk to your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Oh, one of it would be very careful of a rugby match I played when I was, that was what, 2009. Yeah, the first thing I would tell him, stay away from that match because you're going to get hurt really, really badly. The other one I would want to tell him is honestly, don't give up on your dreams. Yeah. Don't give up on your dreams no matter what. Because recently I had someone actually spoke to me about this. The whole COVID situation that's happening around the world. It's a very sad and a very, yeah, it's just a very sad and painful thing for a lot of people around the world. But it changed my way of life. Why I say that is because I'm overseas, me traveling used to be a big part of what I do, being able to create programs to take kids on, be it the UK, the States, around Southeast Asia. We even have a program in Kenya where we do wildlife conservation. We have a whole winter sport theme going on in Finland. So we've got so many cool programs going on around the world, but the moment COVID hit me, it all came to a standstill. And because of that, I was just this close to giving up on my dreams. Yeah, are you guys still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Can you see us?
Screen froze up for a bit. Yeah. And yeah, like I was saying, I was so close to giving up on what I was good at doing. And so if I could go back and tell my younger self when I was 16, do not, whatever you set out to do, nobody, no situation on earth can stop you, unless of course you're dead. But yeah, that's what I would tell him, because now I am waiting for this whole situation to blow over to begin my next phase of program design, and to hopefully take Chinese kids to whole new areas, locations, and to just, yeah, seriously, my motto is to explore the world through your own eyes. So yeah, that's what I set out to do, and I think I'm going to be doing that all the way till I stop. Yeah.
How are the COVID-19 restrictions in Shanghai right now?
Okay, so from a foreigner's point of view, from my perspective, I honestly felt China handled this COVID situation better than any country out there, even my own. One of the few things is when COVID happened in China, the response was so quick. It happened last year before Chinese New Year, and they just, the whole cities were shut off. Yeah, they shut down all the cities, they stopped it, and we were back, the whole of Shanghai was back in business within 2.5 months. Schools were back in progress and stuff, so they handled it awesome. And now in Shanghai, in fact, for the last, we had many outbreaks along the way, but for most part, while it was very difficult for a lot of countries out there, China has maintained life as per normal. Like, I didn't even feel I was going through an outbreak for most of the time during my time here in China. Yeah, I did not feel, besides the travel restrictions, yeah, I did not feel I was going through a crisis or an outbreak. It really was that safe and secure. Everybody had a part to play. And that face mask, it is just hugely, hugely important to keep this virus at bay. Yeah.
How did COVID-19 impact the business side?
Well, it hit us hard. When COVID came, it basically put my business, my company at a standstill. And we lost, that there was just huge losses all around because we could not go out due to the restrictions. Both local and foreign policies told us to stand down. So yeah, financially we took a hit, but we only had one thing in mind. So my company's core value is Yihaizuweipen. That's Chinese. It means we're child-centric. Everything we do is for the kids. The design is from a child's perspective and stuff. So when this hit, the first thing we did was we refunded all our clients. Every single client who bought a winter program for us, we refunded them their money. Even most of our partners, those that we could refund, we refunded. But overall, just for that season, that was what, 2020. Yeah, 2020, the start of 2020, we lost, we lost about, what, 10, 20 million US dollars. That was a lot because we had, the company still had to run. And yeah, we actually made it through that half year without any form of income. All the management sacrificed their own salary so that we could maintain the company. Our first option was to not have to let anybody go. Those were hard 6 months. But yeah, things are looking better now. Local programs are selling better than they ever have. I think we're looking at what, 80% growth over the last 1 year for local programs. So yeah, business is actually coming back and it's getting better than it was before pre-COVID. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I have one more question and I think that will pretty much wrap up our interview. But if you could say you've learned one great thing that improved your life, what would you say that either great saying or lesson, what was that lesson that improved your life?
This lesson was taught me by my dad. Actually, two important things they taught me. One thing was, in order to make it, you have to look like you already made it. That's what my dad told me. He said first impressions are very, very important in no matter what aspect of your life, be it meeting a lady friend, going for an interview and stuff. Yeah, so he always told me first impressions count from that handshake. The second thing they taught me was this. In their time, hard work meant everything. You could make money just through sure hard work. But in our generation, or at least starting from my generation, I was born in the 90s, you have to work smart. They told me that. If you get a job that is what, from 9 to 5, and you work hard every day, you are not going to get anywhere. That is how modern society works. So because of their advice, that was one of the main reasons why when I saw the opportunity in China to join a startup and to create business here, I took it. Yeah, because I agreed. It's working for the man might not work anymore in our generation. Yeah. So those were the two things that my dad taught me that, yeah, I remember till today.
That's really interesting.
That was great.
Well, we appreciate you getting on this interview with us.
No problem.
I'm happy to show people like kind of your background and how things are in China. And I just really appreciate it. And well, once this COVID goes down, we'll have to come over there sometime.
Yeah, I heard about that. I'm actually looking forward to hosting all of you. Yeah, even if your friend Carter comes, he can hang out at my place.
Yeah, that'd be fun. So yeah, we really appreciate it, and thanks so much for taking the time, and congratulations on getting engaged.
Thank you, Louis. Thank